Hello and welcome to another edition of the Tigers Down Under. I'm your host, Alex, and with me we have Ant from To Hull and Back. How are you, Ant?
I'm fine, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. From a football point of view, doing a little worse. Obviously, you were on To Hull and Back yesterday, so you would have already spoken at length about these two frustrating results that we've had over Easter, but we'll run through them here as well. I suppose starting with the Stoke game, but even collectively, it puts us in a pretty difficult position now to make the playoffs. How do you, I guess, firstly see the rest of the season and what we can achieve for the rest of the season? And then second of all, particularly with the Stoke fixture, that frustration to not be able to achieve the results required?
Yeah, for me, I feel like the Stoke game was probably the nail in the coffin for the top six for me. Which was a shame because I do think that when going into the Leeds game, the problem probably was losing to Stoke meant that Leeds was a must win, because even a point in Elland Road probably wouldn't have been good enough in the grand scheme of things, you know, chasing the top six and the amount of points we had to make up, goal difference and everything as well, obviously being worse than the teams above us. So we have to have more points, not the same points, else we'd be behind on goal difference. But for me, it was just the disappointment of the performance, which we keep seeing time and time again at home. You know, you think about the fact that we played Swansea, Birmingham and Stoke at home, which, you know, if you're a side chasing the top six, that should be 9 points, really. Yeah, I know there's no easy games in the Championship, but there are three sides that were fighting relegation. And we come away with a point and a goal. So, I mean, it's clear where the problem has been this season. We don't score anywhere near enough at home. I think realistically now, there's no pressure on us because the chances of us getting top six is probably a lot slimmer than it was two or three games ago. Obviously, there was an international break. But now, let's maybe just take the shackles off and see what this team's capable of. I mean, I think this is now a chance for Rosini to try and salvage some, you know, feel good for the end of the season and going into next season with a, all right, yeah, so maybe we can play this way and it works. Because I think the biggest gripe of the fan base at the minute, especially at home, is we're just not attacking enough. We don't take enough risks. We don't go for it, Alex. We're very pedestrian. It's very predictable. I don't know if I just dropped out then. I might have done. Very pedestrian. We're very predictable. And it's been an issue for 20 home games now. So yeah, there has to be a solution to it. And let's try doing it now.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Birmingham game, and obviously Tufan, the nature of the goal and probably nudging it in with his hand a little bit as well. You could argue that we could have come away with no goals and no points from those three games. I was going to bring up that Swansea game because it just felt such a replica of that Swansea fixture, of the fact that we didn't even have a shot on target for the entire fixture, is the big frustration, and particularly once you've gone behind. And I think we've seen it time and again where if we do fall behind, the tactics or the pace of the play does speed up. We do score goals. Like, I look at that Huddersfield game as a perfect example where we're very pedestrian and conservative for the bulk of that fixture once we're 1-0 up. And then as soon as Huddersfield score, we flick the switch and we go up the other end and score again. And you just think, why aren't we doing that to begin with? Why aren't we going 2-0 up, 3-0 up to really secure the 3 points in games? And we see when we don't do that, what happens in that Birmingham game where we do concede and aren't able to find that winner. Rosini keeps talking about the fact that he's learnt the lessons, or he's learnt from these results and we'll tweak things. But then we see the Stoke fixture where it just doesn't seem to be happening. And it's a really hard one. And so what would you sort of, I guess, pinpoint as the issue in terms of perhaps the team lineup? I mean, we saw Ohio start against Stoke. I'm probably a bit of a harsh marker on him. I thought he hasn't been a particularly good signing. I think his hold-up play at times is okay, but doesn't seem to really, I don't know whether it's he doesn't press with the side or whether he doesn't make the right runs for his teammates. But when we don't play with a striker, everyone complains. But then when we do play with a striker, we just don't seem to have one that can be quite effective enough.
Yeah, I think a lot of the problem we've had in terms of creating chances and looking having any sort of potency in an offensive sense is the fact that we've accommodated the quite underwhelming Zorori into the side and moved Philogene from his favoured left-hand side to the right-hand side. But like you say, with the striker issue, obviously missing Delap was a massive miss and probably the one that brought the curtains down on a top six case, really. But when that happens, that you've got decisions to make, do you let him go back to Man City, pick up that loan spot on those wages for somebody else who could be just as effective? They took a gamble and hope to be back soon enough, or that we're still in the chase when he comes back, that, you know, he can just sort of hit the ground running with us. And they brought in experience with Billy Sharp, who maybe on paper with his experience and the goals he scored at this level on a free, it made sense. But with him being 38, 39 now after his birthday, obviously, he's not mobile enough. He's not the same player. He doesn't suit our system. He's not going to drop deep, hold the ball up and take up the pitch like Delap does, and like, say, Noah Ahiyo. We haven't really seen enough of him for me. He looked good when he came on against Rotherham, obviously scored that goal. And then he's had hardly any football in between. He got the start against, obviously, Stoke, like you mentioned, and he just... I don't know if it's a case of... I mean, when he had the chance to hold the ball up, his touch looked a little bit lacking, but is that down to a lack of match sharpness because he's not really played that often? There were clips of him playing for the Holland under-21s in the international break, and he looked pretty good. You know, and people say, you know, let's play this lad. He's got some about him. Is he another victim of the system? You know, maybe that's not his style of play. Maybe he's another one that's off the shoulder like Connolly. Maybe he just prefers to be a poacher in the box, and we hardly ever put the ball in the box. So I just don't understand the recruitment policy in terms of strikers at the minute, because he wanted reliable, robust players that can play every week and not get injured. We don't have that. You know, Delap's injured now for a long time, hopefully back quite soon. Connolly's made of glass, he's always injured. That's probably why he had a one-year deal. Ahiyo, apparently, he's made a couple of comments about not being match fit enough. Billy Sharp's 39 years old. He's not going to play 90 minutes every week and probably not play twice a week. So it's for me, if you've got a system of play and if you've got a plan A that you want to play, you've got to bring in strikers that fit that system. And I just feel like with the strikers, we haven't done that. Like Billy Sharp, if you want to play him, you need to play him alongside a strike partner. You need to just keep him in the box. You don't need him outside the box, holding up the ball, linking up play. That's not what Billy Sharp does. Especially not at this stage of his career. He just needs to be in the box scoring goals. Give him chances. Give him that confidence to just say, right, I'm just going to let you do you. The ball falls to you. Just stick it at the back of the net. But we don't do that. We ask him to play with his back to goal. So it's a bizarre one. I just think that in terms of recruiting strikers, we've only really had the lap that's worked for us. And then obviously you've got the whole Oscar Estepinian thing. But I get the whole sense in he doesn't, again, fit Rosini's system, but we know he scores goals. So,
yeah.
I don't know, it's a bizarre one that he's going to have to try and solve in summer.
Yeah, the big bugbear for me as well is, I think it was when Ajun first came in, he said that he was going to use the majority of transfer funds to bring in, you know, reliable quality strikers, and he didn't want to mess around with that position because it's such an important position. And look, maybe it is a Rosini decision rather than a Tan decision, but I think that's where it comes back to as well. Ultimately, Rossini is the head coach. Tan is the director of football, so to speak, or whatever his technical title is. Tan is the one, ultimately, I think, who should be saying, as much as Rossini is setting the strategy and the philosophy of style of play, Tan should then be sort of allocating the budget in a way that best, I suppose, fills out the squad to do so. And as you say, I mean, we've got Sharp, we've got Ahiyo, we've got Delap, we've got Connolly, who are all either free transfers or loans. We haven't spent a transfer fee on any players, and granted, you don't need to spend a transfer fee to get a good quality player in, as we've seen Delap has been our best striker this season and he's just on loan. But it will be a very interesting summer, where essentially we're coming into a summer where we have no strikers on the books at this stage, unless for whatever reason we resign Connolly on a new deal perhaps, or if we can make a big play to get Delap in. It's going to be a very interesting summer to see what we do, especially in that position.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I think the plan is that the lap's going to come back in some fashion, whether that be loan or permanent. Probably depends on who leaves in summer. I mean, I fully expect Philogene and Greaves to both leave. I know he's just done a press release today saying that he wouldn't even sell Philogene for 30 million, but like as pointed out in the tweet, he said the same about King Lewis Potter. And you know, if Philogene turns around and says, "I want to go," we're going to sell him, aren't we? And recent performances have maybe hinted at the fact that he's got his eye on Premier League. I'd like to believe it hasn't, as I said on ours last night, that I just think he's having a bit of a dip in confidence personally. But it's the case of, for me, if Rossini is going to be stubborn and play this style of play and say, this is my plan A, it's going to work, trust me, then he needs to recruit players that are perfect for it, that fit it, whether that be the first choice striker, the second choice striker. We need to be able to rotate the team, bring players in for a suspension and injury, and then be maybe not as effective because obviously you're going to have the strongest 11, but players that come in and don't take away from the tactical side of things, that you can bring in a less effective player, but then still allow the other players to do their best thing and not have to accommodate. So, yeah, it's a big summer. Like I say, I fully expect the lad to be back. I think he loves it here. I think he's at a stage of his career now where he's not going to play at Man City, and he didn't have very fruitful loan spells at Preston or Stoke. Seems to have found a home here. I think all of the loan players, I think Cavallio probably is a bit of a stretch. I don't think we'd bring him in. Possibly on loan again. I don't know. Let's see who Liverpool's new manager is. So I think in an offensive sense, we do actually recruit quite well. But like I say, it's like, is there a little bit of sometimes the big players aren't really stepping up to the mark? Like Cavalli obviously is the only one who seems to be scoring goals at the minute. But Philogene seems to go missing at the minute. Zarori hasn't really announced his arrival yet in a Hull City shirt. Then you've got Omer, who's looked really good, but is in and out of the team for some bizarre reason. And then, like we say, all the strikers just sort of, we're not even playing strikers. It's a very big summer, I think, in an attacking sense, because scoring goals has been the issue this season. So it is the problem position.
Yeah, and it was interesting. We were sort of talking in our chat amongst ourselves about the nature of that recruitment, in the sense that you look, and hindsight's a wonderful thing, but you sort of look at the recruitment of Zarori, Carvalho, which is probably the one that has worked out, as you say, Ömer, Ohio, and you think, if we were playing Tufan and Ömer over Carvalho and Zarori, perhaps, I don't necessarily know if you lose a whole lot of output. Maybe you know, Carvalho has popped up and scored goals, which has been quite valuable. But by playing those two over Zarori and Carvalho, it lets Philogene stay in his more natural left-hand position. You're saving a whole lot of transfer budget from those two players. And it feels at times that, like with Twine in the summer, when we're given the option or the ability to sign some of these players, the club is very, you're almost in a position where you can't say no. If Twine pops up as a player available, if Carvalho pops up as a player available, you kind of go with it. And then you figure out afterwards how to fit all the players in. And we are now, like you sort of said, why Ömer is popping in and out of the team. And it's really because if we do try to play with a striker, it's Ömer who's, I guess, the one who gets sacrificed. And to be honest, it probably should be Zarori over Ömer. But it almost feels like we've got too many of those attacking players. Like you look at a Tufan and he's barely able to get a start these days because there's just not a place for him in the side. And you think, is starting Tufan over Carvalho perhaps actually not that much of a difference in terms of output, and you know, Tufan's going to be here next season? It just feels as if we've got all of these attacking options, and as you say, none of them are necessarily poor, and that's actually part of the issue, where you go, well, how do you then fit them all in, how do you accommodate them? And that sort of ends up in a position that we found ourselves in, where we've lost that consistency of performance, because competition for positions is one thing, but we've kind of gone to the extreme of just saying, like, you know, Traore's not even had a look in really since returning from AFCON.
Yeah, I think ultimately for me it comes down to if you have good enough players that I mean, let's be honest, after January we've definitely got a squad that's capable of the top six, in my opinion. Maybe we're missing that 15 to 20 goal a season striker, like, you know, Coventry have got in Hadji Wright and Ellis Sims, but we definitely have enough quality to create multiple chances to put the ball in the back of the net, because we don't really have one goal scorer. We share it amongst the team. For me, when you've got players like Tufan, Cavallo, Zarori, Philogene, that to me screams goals. So the only logical explanation for it to me is that we are lacking about, I don't know what we do in training, the system. Obviously, because for me, from the defence to the midfield, it's perfect. Like, from the play out from the back, I'm fine with it. I like watching it. It's attractive football. Yes, okay, it can be a bit bland at home, and it needs to probably, the tempo needs upping, and the urgency needs to be a bit better. But for me, the blueprint is there. I'm fine with it. I think the vast majority of the fan base are fine with it. It's just, all you've got to do is, the system just needs tweaking. We just need to you know, how do we get the best out of this player in this position? Why are we taking our best player out of that position to put him in one where he's less effective? Why is Omer not playing when he seems to be the only one who can willingly run with the ball at the minute and try and create chances, win the ball back and graft? And like you say, you've got Ozan Tufan, who perhaps is quite harshly dropped quite regularly, considering, you know, the effort he puts in, even off the ball this season, he's been fantastic and winning the ball back. And when you've got him alongside Omer, I thought they were both fantastic at Leeds. So for me, at the minute, I feel like Cavalio and Tufan needs to be the two we play up there. Based on the fact that last season, towards the end, when we was playing without a striker, Tufan was the one who, you know, that sort of false nine position, he was really good at. And Cavalio is far better in the number 10. So I think, given the current options in terms of strikers, that's probably the best two to play up top. Philogene needs to be on the left and Omer needs to be on the right. And then all it needs to be is that approach player, that decision making. I know Rosinia cannot make decisions for players, but in terms of training, coaching, and the system and maximising the potential for a player to make a good decision, it's got to be better. Because we can't just say, you know, over 40 games or something that we've played this season, that it's been unlucky. We're not.
Yeah.
You can't be unlucky for 40 games in a season. We scored 14 goals in four of the home games. The other 16, we've only scored 13. So there is a clear issue that needs resolving. I mean, I would say defensively we're quite strong. We actually very rarely get clean sheets. So, but you can forgive that because we always thought that, you know, we'd be sacrificing maybe clean sheets and conceding goals because we'd be going up the other end and scoring like Ipswich do. But we're not doing that. So you have to address which one's most important. Do we, you know, continue as we are, not creating much chances, but then focus on keeping teams out like we did last season? Do you try and find a balance, or do you just say, right, screw it, let's just go all attack for the rest of the year? And personally, we know we can be good defensively. We've seen it last season. We know we can kind of balance it like we've seen this season, but we haven't seen enough offensive. So I would say now that we've got nothing to lose, everything to gain from, you know, winning games, scoring goals and getting the optimism back up, let's just take the chains off and see what they can do. Just let them go out there and express themselves because we've got the players to do it.
Yeah, this has been a bit of a broader discussion, so we'll move on to talk about Leeds a bit more. But first, I've set you a pretty tough task of trying to come up with three players worthy of votes or mention in the Stoke game. I've gone with Omer, who didn't even start the game, did he? He came off the bench for Ohio, and then Slater and Giles as my three. It was very hard pickings to come up with three. I think you sort of said before about the midfield, I think Slater's one who really has shown his worth in that midfield role. And particularly, I mean, we'll talk the Leeds game as well, and a controversial moment at the end aside for him. I thought it was another outstanding display for Slater against Leeds. But he's really been one, particularly in the second half of the season, I think, who's really stepped up and really impressed.
Yeah, I mean, Slater's one of those players who you actually, I mean, me personally, I would want in my team. Your only problem is where do you play him and who do you play him instead of? Because I think if you play him in that deeper role alongside Seri, as much as you get sort of that industrious, gritty, winning the ball back, box-to-box dynamism you get with him, you miss that bit of quality from Morton that he can give within passes and Seri's control of the game. So you don't really want to drop him for either of them. And then I personally think, like with Slater, because we've seen when we played him as like a left winger or a number 10, he's got the capacity to make late runs into the box, score goals. He's got a long range shot on him. I think his best position is played further up the pitch. But then who do you drop for him? You know, he's not going to play above Cavalier. He's not going to play above Tufan. He's not going to play on the wing. So it's really tough with Slater, but he's another one of those players like Louis Coyle, like Alfie Jones. They are absolute dependable, solid 8 out of 10s as a minimum every single week. And he epitomises, I think, what Rosinia wants to do in the terms of he will work his socks off for the team. Just as I think, like you mentioned, Omer, I think since he's come into the club, he's also done that. You know, we can see that he's got clear quality on the ball and great technical ability, great delivery. But off the ball, I think he's been fantastic. I think against Leeds, like his ability to try and track back and win the ball back and battle for second balls, like which a lot of the teams, I think the players, Seri's guilty of it a lot. When the ball's available to be won as a second, you know, a 50-50 battle or a second ball, we tend to sort of lightheartedly go into it, whereas Omer just really goes for it. And when you've got players like that in your team, that's why you become hard to beat, because you have got players in there that are never going to be passengers. And Slater is the epitome of that for me. Louis Coyle, the same. I thought, you know, it's easy to say for him in the Stoke game, but I thought Louis Coyle again was great. The Stoke game was hard to pick three decent performers out of. But, you know, like I said, I'll just go with the usual dependable. Louis Coyle, like you say, Regan Slater, and Omer, like I agree, come off the bench and did more than Ohio did since starting.
Yeah, good shout. We'll chat briefly on the Leeds game, and then we'll preview the Cardiff game. We've already sort of been touching on the Leeds game as it stands, but this one was an interesting one for me because of the performances that we'd put up against Southampton and Leicester previous to this, and the fact that we do seem to match up quite well against these more high tempo teams. Aside from going behind early, which I think Leeds really could have gone up 2-0, to be honest, through that Bamford miss. I thought we actually settled into the game quite well, and to have 60% possession against Leeds, and, you know, yes, possession isn't the aim of the game. It's, you know, getting the ball in the back of the net. I still think to be able to control the game to that extent against a side like Leeds, I've seen a lot of comments, no doubt you have as well, from Leeds fans, or heard comments from Leeds fans that, you know, that was one of the better teams to come to Elland Road. And, you know, I think one of the comments was actually like, if we'd had a striker on the pitch, we might've actually come away with the result against them. The point is, though, I think that the striker that we'd have needed is the one still out injured. But 3-1, I think, is a bit of a harsh scoreline in a way, because, you know, the nature of the two goals coming quite late as they did. Ömer having a great chance, as well as Philogene in that second half. It wasn't a terrible performance, but, you know, after that Stoke game, it just feels a little bit like that extra nail in the coffin, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think the problem is that it's harder to accept that defeat at Leeds, despite how good the performance was, because of the manner of defeat at Stoke and what that probably meant for the grand scheme of the season. But yeah, like you say, at Leeds, I mean, we more than matched what I would say is one of the best teams in the league again. And it's so frustrating. I mean, it's two-sided for me, because it's frustrating, because if we even played to 70% of what we did against Leeds against Stoke, we'd have blown them out of the park. We just don't seem to be able to replicate these kind of performances against the sides, you know, at the other end of the league. And I know it's completely different tactical setup. Leeds are going to open up, come on to us, as are the Southamptons and Leicesters, and that's why we get such good results against them. And then the teams that sit back and try and contain us, passing lanes and strangle the space, is where we really struggle. But, you know, for me, over the course of a season, there needs to have been an outcome to that, and we didn't see that against Stoke. But against Leeds, yeah, absolutely brilliant. I thought we more than deserved something from that game. I was at the match when we was outside the stadium waiting for a taxi. We had loads of Leeds fans walk past us saying, "You deserve more from that game. You played really well." And this is strange to hear from Leeds fans. This isn't a normal thing to happen. So they were coming up and they were complimenting us. And they were, yeah, there was a couple of players saying, "No idea why you don't play with a striker. You know, if you'd have took a couple of those chances, you would have had us dead and buried." And it was just two good sides going for it. Neither side wanted to draw. Both sides wanted to win. And it came down to whichever side made the first mistake or whichever side had the first bit of real quality. You know, Leeds' first goal was a bit fortunate in the sense of it's poor defending, really, after the rebound in the air. Our goal was a fantastic bit of play from Tyler Morton. And then the game's pretty even from that point. We had, like you say, with Omer's chance, but that came in a brief period where we were really on top. Leeds were sloppy. The fans were against them. We were constantly winning the ball back in the final third, getting into good positions and getting shots away. Jaden had a couple of chances. And this is the problem. We have these phases in games where we're on top and we create chance after chance after chance. We miss them. And then what happens? The other team goes down the other end, gets a bit of luck, and we've lost the game or given a game away. And that's just been the story of our season. That game epitomised our season to me. You know, we for the most part, we were good. We were in it. We matched the good teams. And we just fall short quality-wise in the final third, make a daft mistake at the back, and we've lost the game. So, yeah, it was frustrating. And like I say, 3-1 was definitely a harsh scoreline because it wasn't a 3-1 game. I think anyone watching that, even neutrals, would agree. I mean, I personally think that after Allsopp had gone up from the corner and then it came back out, that he should have gone back. But you know, is what it is. We would have been saying that if it had resulted in a goal because the players having to mark him and someone else was free. So, but, you know, hindsight's a good thing. But no, yeah, it was a really good performance. Massive shame about the score. It was gut-wrenching, really.
Yeah, even Leeds fans down here in Australia were praising us and saying they don't know how we're not in the top six with performances like that. So don't worry, Leeds fans the world over are the same. Normally they're on my back giving me sticks. So it was good to get a bit of praise. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I guess the other question to ask on this game before we move on to Cardiff, just in terms of the lineup, obviously McLaughlin dropping out for this one. So it was still a back four with Slater playing right back and then Coyle at centre back. It felt like it changed a little bit when Coyle went off. It felt more like a back three. You talked just as we were finishing off on the Stoke game about going for it a bit more with these last six games. Did it seem to you that this was Rosinha trying to go for it a bit more or change his shape, try something new, or was it more just a case of needing the pace of Coyle at centre-back to deal with the Leeds forwards rather than McLaughlin, who's a bit slower?
Yeah, I'm really interested to know because I've not actually listened or read to any questions that were asked in regards to why McLaughlin was dropped. It was certainly an eyebrow raiser in the stand once all the team line up, because to me, if you've got two natural centre-backs, then you should be playing two natural centre backs, and you've got a natural right back playing in natural right back. It seemed bizarre. I mean, I know he knows that Slater will do any role that's asked of him to the best of his ability, and for the most part, he did do well against Somerville. The only two times really that Somerville got sort of one on one with him and got round him resulted in the first and the second goal.
Yeah, but
it was a case of, I mean, I'm thinking about it now, your suggestion of maybe Coyle sort of backing up Slater, he preferred, I don't know, to maybe having Alfie Jones and Coyle there on that side. I can't make sense of it personally. Whether or not Macca, in terms of, I don't know, maybe positionally Rosinha didn't fancy him. I'm not sure. I've not played enough football to face an attack as potent as Leeds. I mean, it's just anyone's guess, really, until Rosinha sort of explains the logic behind it. It's just up for speculation, isn't it? But like you say, we played similar against Southampton and it worked out. And we know Slater can do a job at right back. You know, yes, the tackle for Somerville's penalty was a bit daft, but and maybe do outside the box. But, you know, he's not a natural right back. So you can't be too critical. He's playing out of position and he always works his socks off.
No, that's it. Votes for this game a little bit easier in the sense. I mean, I thought Coyle was outstanding. I mean, you sort of touched on him for the Stoke game, natural leader, and he's one that's really surprised me this season. I wouldn't have thought he'd be in the conversation for most improved, but I think he's really put his case forward as almost the Ashby, I suppose, of this team in terms of, I think the fans to an extent write him off because we signed him in League One and was seen as perhaps having a ceiling in the squad, similar to Slater in a lot of ways, who I gave the two votes to. But both of those players have really shown that they have that ability to step up and raise their level as the quality requires it. So I think Coyle and Slater were terrific in this one again. And then Irma with the one vote for me, I thought, you know, That chance he had in the second half especially, but as you said as well, his graft off the ball, his ability to try and win the ball back is terrific. And it's nice to see one of these Turkish signings actually coming off and looking like a quality addition to the squad.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for me it was, Coyle was absolutely... And considering, like you say, he's I don't... Is that the first time he's played right back for us? Centre-back, sorry? It might have. Before the end of a game, but certainly from the start of a game, first time he's and then considering the quality of the opposition he was against as well, absolutely fantastic and probably man of the match for me. Real shame he had to go off. I would give my second one for Tufan. I thought he was absolutely fantastic, worked his socks off as he always does, ran himself into the ground. I think what impressed me most about him in this game was his willingness to go into 50-50 battles, win the ball back as high as possible and get the team going forward. His link-up play with Omer was good. And then my third, would be Omer. I just think that he's fantastic. I absolutely love him as a player. Like you say, he came probably as one of the most sceptical signings of January because he's another one of those that could have turned out to be a Dogan cynic. No one really knew anything about him, didn't know what to expect. You know, you can watch a YouTube video of anybody and they look good. So the fact that he's come here and made such an impact, you know, I love his tenacity and his desire to play for the side and to do well. So yeah, no, they were my three.
Good shouts. Okay, well, we'll wrap things up with a quick preview of that Cardiff game. I suppose the interesting one is in terms of the lineup now. We've sort of talked about it in terms of both games already. Greaves, no doubt, to come back in at centre-back. But I do wonder if, as you touched on there with Toufan, whether he's sort of like last season, he's going to round off the season as that forward option for us. It'll be interesting to see. Delap probably is still a couple of games away, but whether we even risk him. It's a really difficult position in one sense because we're not mathematically out of the playoff race, whether we do still sort of rush Delap back and try and throw him into the lineup in a couple of games' time, or we just wrap him in cotton wool if there is perhaps an agreement already in place or talks already in place for next season, whether it does mean that Toufan gets more opportunities up top. But perhaps certainly for the Cardiff game, that's what it would look like.
Yeah. I think the same as what we mentioned on our episode last night. I think the only changes he'll make could be forced ones because of injury. I think Giles might be out for a little while.
Fortunately, all three of the back four, I think, really. Giles, I mean, Coyle, potentially.
Coyle has this ability to get injured and then within a week be back in the side like he's arisen again. So Coyle, I expect to be probably back sooner than any of the others, but. I'd expect Matty Jacob and, like you say, Jacob Groups to be brought in and Slater probably to stay in that right-back position. I don't think he'll put Christie there, personally. Mm. I think Christie came on at centre-half against Leeds and straight away, I think the first thing he did was a Leeds player was running at him and I said, please don't dive in at this. And he just dived straight in and completely missed him and the Leeds player was running. I was like, oh, God. He just seems to have not recovered from that injury properly, Christie. So I think Slater will probably stay in right-back and then... I think the attack will stay the same, personally. He might be tempted to drop Jaden, but I don't think he will because of how important a player he can be when he's on his game. And I do think that one goal reignites him again. He's a flair, technical, arrogant player. They thrive off backing themselves and doing the unthinkable. And after a couple of games, when you don't do that, that desire sort of drops. And I think that's the kind of rut that he's in at the minute. He needs to just sort of be arrogant again and believe in what he's doing because he's overdoing things and overthinking things. And he just needs to go back to just doing what he does best, running at players, creating chances, scoring goals. But the Delap one's interesting because I think for me, it doesn't make sense because if we're not going to play Delap or have no intention of bringing him back anytime soon, then we should have sent him back to Man City.
Yeah.
Especially even if you're going to try and bring him back next season, you know, let him just go back to the Etihad and do his recovery in what I would imagine a far superior medical facilities and things like that. Maybe he wanted to bring him back just to keep him in and around the squad so he feels a part of it. That's probably a very resilient thing to do, I think. But I think that what the club have done, they've sold us a bit of a double bluff. I think what they've done is he's probably fit to play now, but they've been waiting until he's fully match fit. So they've probably been giving him minutes with, you know, like a game to play a game, getting his match sharpness up with youngsters and things like that in training. So that when he comes into the side, we've got a fully firing Liam Delap to go again. But that's just like me being optimistic because I can't make any sense of why we wouldn't, why we would keep a player that's injured for so long when you could replace that loan spot with somebody who could be more effective and play from that point onwards. You know, this has been however many months Delap's been missing, could have been another player that we could have brought in January instead of, you know, instead of maybe we limited ourselves to the likes of Ohio because, you know, Delap's wages. I don't know. Like, we don't know what the club's done and what they're thinking with Delap. I'd love to see him come back absolutely fully firing and give us some optimism for what remains of this season. See if we can claw back that gap and even just be in the mix for the last couple of games and have something to play for. Because I think that they've got to make a couple of statement wins, especially at home. So that we go into next season thinking that's what we can do. Let's go for it again. Let's after the what I imagine will be a rebuild. Let's go for it again. We can win at home. This is us doing it. So yeah, but I would keep the same attacking lineup as Leeds definitely because I thought going forwards the midfield and the attack were perfectly fine for me.
Yeah, the interesting one as well for me is bringing Sharp in to me felt like it was done to give guidance and. Sort of assistance to Delap's development. And to do that for a player that's on loan is an interesting one, which suggests to me, hopefully, and again, it's probably my optimism like you, that perhaps it means that there's a deal in place for next season, or at least there's some reasonable assurances that we can get Delap back for next season. On the Coyle one, you know, maybe he should be giving blood donations out at the club, giving some of whatever he's got running through his veins to Aaron Connolly, for example, just to get him up and running a bit more. But yeah. But speaking of Connolly and also Chrissy, I mean, I was looking at highlights from that 3-0 win over Cardiff back in December, which I think might have been the last time that we won by more than a goal.
It was probably our last decent performance at
home. Yeah, you look at Connolly making runs, you know, also firing balls over the top for Connolly to run onto. I think Chrissy was playing at right back that day as well. And you're like, it just looks like Scott Twine firing a free kick into the goal. Just looked like a completely different team that day. So, and I think it was one of Toofan's best performances as well, because I think Bullitt after that game was saying, you know, Toofan should be back in the national team setup. So, it does feel quite a long time ago that was the case. I mean, Cardiff are no slouches either. They've got 3 wins in their last 5. They've beaten Ipswich and Coventry in that time as well. So it's not the game that it looked like being a couple of weeks ago when Cardiff were sort of on a slump and heading towards mid-table. It will be a tough game in that sense. But I guess to round things up, do you have a score prediction or a confidence heading into this one?
I am confident in this. More confident than I thought I'd be, considering the fact that we've not won in 6 games or something like that. I think the fact that Cardiff are doing so well will suit us, because it means that they'll probably come on to us, you know, wearing bad form. They're doing really well, a couple of really good statement wins, like you say. They're probably fancying their chances of being one of those sides who just sort of appear from nowhere and gone a late charge. And like we say, when teams open up and come on to us and attack, that's where we're best. If we perform like we did against Leeds, against Cardiff, we beat them. Personally, yeah. I think we've got more quality than Cardiff. If we put that similar performance level in, like we did against Southampton, like we did against Leeds, like we did against Leicester, we will beat them. I just don't think we've got enough goals in us, as we've shown all season. We just can't kill teams off. We can't, like, say if we get an early goal and you think, oh, here we go, we're going to thump these. We get that one goal and then we kind of just sit off a bit and don't really go for the jugular. And it's quite frustrating, but away from home, we are a far better side than we are at home. And I think because Cardiff are playing so well, it'll suit us. So I'm going to go for a 1-0 win for us.
I think I'm thinking a 1-0 or a 2-1. I think, as you say, we seem to, if we go a goal up, we'd sort of take our foot off the gas. I really do hope now that we've got, I think I was sort of thinking going into that Stoke game, I was saying to Dan on one of our last episodes, it almost felt like a replica of how we play within games, where if we go a goal down, we kind of go all out attack to get back in front. Now that we're behind Norwich and we're also chasing goal difference, I actually thought going to that Stoke game, it might open us up and actually see us being a lot more attacking, because we needed to chase down that goal difference, which wasn't the case, obviously. But hopefully we do see something like that against Cardiff, where if we do go a goal up, we do keep attacking, because, you know, we do, as you say, we still want to be in the conversation come the end of the season. We've got Plymouth on the last day, which is a really plum fixture, so long as they're not still fighting relegation. Hopefully that they're sort of safe by that point, and it's a bit of a plum fixture. You want to be in the conversation. You want to have that ability to potentially have a say on the playoff places. But that all starts with this game against Cardiff. So, look, hopefully we can get the 3 points in this one and kickstart some sort of run to the end of the season. But yeah, look, thank you for joining me for this one, Ant.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for asking. I'll always come on air. I love coming on different podcasts, especially with you guys. Obviously, we've got a nice little relationship built, haven't we? It's good.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, all the other lads were pretty flat out with work this week, so it was good to be able to bring you in to fill in for one of them. So yeah, look, and thank you everyone for listening into this episode. We'll be back next week with our regular programming. Reviewing that Cardiff game, hopefully 3 points in the books, and looking ahead to the end of the season. But until then, come on, City.
You've been listening to the official Hull City Australia podcast, The Tigers Down Under. For more discussion, join us on Facebook at the Hull City AFC Australia Facebook group, or follow us on Twitter at Hull City AFC Oz. The music was created by Amber and Black.
There's no turning back.